You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
We got a texter who wants to know what we do during recorded interviews. As I know, Justin and Moore are working. Salk, you just eat banana cream Pop-Tarts during that time? No. Not this week, anyway. Last week, I did. I think I ate one every day last week, didn't I?
Well, you're a great smoothie now, so you've turned a whole new lifestyle.
Yeah, I've turned over the leaf again. I don't know about a whole new lifestyle like forever, but I think I'm paying for the sins of the last 5 or 6 months, and it's been day three here of green smoothies and hard-boiled eggs only. So, yeah.
You were off red meat, too, for a minute.
I haven't had red meat in a couple weeks, as a matter of fact.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'll get back to it. I'm not making a plant-based turn fully and forever, but just trying to be a little healthier and trying to start to limit maybe some of the red meat intake. But maybe during recorded interviews, I'll see if I can, find some roast beef or something and start chugging it. All right. What if the Mariners of 2022, these Mariners we're watching that won yesterday, what if they're just the bizarro 2021 Mariners? So you look at some of the numbers, you look at some of the runs scored, et cetera, and when people are trying to make you feel better, right, when the team is floundering a little bit, especially offensively, and they're like, well, the run differential's just a hair below even, and they are scoring runs. They're pitching better than they did last year, right, especially in the rotation. They're just maybe not coming up big in the big moments, right? And that's what last year's team did so well, right? They managed to ride a negative run differential all the way to 90 wins because they did it at the right spots, right? They sort of punted on games where they didn't have a chance. Remember some of those games, bullpen games or non-competitive starts, where they'd be like, oh, yeah, we don't have a chance. Throw Duggar out there and a couple other dudes.
Like the San Diego series.
We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, but that happened a few times. And even later in the year, it wasn't just then where it was like, if they were in the game, you got the A team out of the bullpen, right? If they were in the game, you got Steckenrider and Sadler and Seawald, and you knew that you had an opportunity to win that game. And if they weren't in the game, it was like they gave up early. It was like, well, oh, well, starting pitcher going to have to wear it, and then we'll throw a couple of random dudes out there at the back of the pen, and we'll let them, go get shots. Remember, they were getting bad starts early from Justice Sheffield, who was in their rotation to start the year. They were having, Justin Dunn was sort of up and down, injuries, et cetera. They had the bullpen starts. They were trying to make it a six-man rotation. Go back to where you were a year ago, and not only was the offense struggling, but they did not have the same level of confidence in their pitching staff, that I think we do today. So in that regard, they look a little bit different. But I guess what I see right now is sort of two problems. And one of them is absolutely sort of not quite fixable, but should change on its own. And that is, right, they're not coming up big in big moments. There is a school of thought that no such thing exists in baseball, that there's just no such thing. That the idea of coming up big in the big moments is nothing more than the timing of when you happen to get a hit off various pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ascribe to that belief?
Not exactly. And by the way, I was looking up at this point last year. Yesterday was the anniversary of the second time we were no hit.
Right.
Last year.
That was
so
fun.
Some of these shutouts definitely don't feel that way. But when you said that they've been hitting, they've been scoring runs, it's like in streaks. Right,
but that's what I mean is that overall the total of runs scored actually looks just fine. It's just you score 7 runs one day and 0 the next day, and yeah, all right, you're putting up 3.5 runs per game, but it doesn't always feel that way,
right?
Because when you're getting shut down, you look completely incompetent. Baseball law sort of says that over time that'll even out, right? That you won't just dominate some games and get dominated in others, that should even out a little bit. And in theory, the luck of when you come up with those big hits, well, they have I was seeing last night, I think Shannon put it up, their numbers with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
I looked they're atrocious.
Too. I think I watched a little compilation. There's 17 different opportunities the Mariners were up to the plate with the bases loaded. They didn't score runs.
Right. I think she said they were 5 for 30 something. with the bases loaded, which is just a, you know, your number's supposed to go up once you start to pressurize the pitcher like that, right? And they don't have anywhere to go with the ball. So, you know, some of that I think is luck and will turn because that's kind of the way baseball works. And so in that regard, I think they may have a little bit of the, you know, bizarro 2021 team going right now. Now, that doesn't help the guys who are just flat out struggling or don't really belong. Right? It doesn't help a player who just doesn't really belong in the big leagues or is, you know, performing or is being put in a position above what their performance dictates. But it should help the Jesse Winkers. It should help, you know, players who have done it and have a record of success that they're just not living up to right now. Over time, those things should get better. I don't know if it helps Abraham Toro. I don't know if it helps Luis Torrens. I don't know if it helps a player that, you know, the Mariners, I think if you're looking at mistakes, it's that maybe they've counted on some guys with limited success in the big leagues and expected them to build off of that or at the very least maintain it.
And one of those big ones is Haniger being out. You now have to slot in somebody who maybe wasn't.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Successful. Yes, that's another good point, right? It's not going to change the whole injury thing. But again, as I look at the lineup, A, I'd love to see him make a small move or two and just get one or two of the guys who right now just are sort of non-competitive out of the lineup. And then hopefully just get a couple dudes hot, right? You saw what it looked like when Ty France and J.P. Crawford were hot together. They were able to do some damage enough at the top of the lineup to really help the Mariners win some games while they were at home on that big homestand. And maybe it's Adam Frazier starting to get hot now, and he's had a couple of nice nights in Toronto. You know, maybe you can just get a couple of dudes hot or, I don't know, hit a home run or two. Because that power will make up for some of the struggles that they have elsewhere in the lineup. So that's one way to fix it. And the other is, as I said, go out and just find somebody, you know, a Kevin Pillar type, a better 4A player than you've got right now, who can just come in and again, maybe give you a couple of solid weeks until Kyle Lewis is actually fully ready. Until mm-hmm. Mitch Haniger comes back in July, mm-hmm. until Jared Kelnick can get himself and his mind kind of untangled and get back here to the big leagues, and I think there are probably some opportunities to do that. And again, we'll talk to Jerry DePoto at 8:30 this morning. We can ask him about it. But I do believe that this lineup doesn't quite have that dude, right? The one guy that the other team just doesn't want to see at any point. You play the Blue Jays, Justin. You mentioned it earlier. You were aware of where Vlad is at all times.
Yep.
You play the Astros, you're aware of where, you know, a few different guys are. Bregman, Alvarez, a couple of, like, you know where they are in the lineup, and you are prepared to see when they're going to show up. You play the Angels, right? You know where Mike Trout is, you know where Otani is. You play the White Sox, you play the Yankees with Aaron Judge and others, right? You have to have some guys that the other team is flat out afraid of at all times. And that's not enough, right? Just ask Robbie Cano and Nelson Cruz. You got to have more than just that guy, but it does help. And I think Julio will be that eventually. And I think Ty France is somebody that people have their eye on. And when Haniger's healthy, yeah, I think people know where he is. But I think over time, and this is why the Julio and Kelnick development is so important. It's so crucial. And why it's a bummer that Winker hasn't done yet what he's done the last couple of years in Cincinnati is you just that one dude that gives you hope. Right, like, yeah, you're down three, but if you can just get a couple dudes on base in front of Vlad, if you can just get a couple of dudes on base in front of Trout, they can change the game in such a hurry, and I don't expect them to have Mike Trout, right? Not everybody does.
Of course not.
But could Julio be Vlad? Yeah. He's absolutely got that same kind of talent and potential, and oh, by the way, he runs and plays a premier defensive position.
So you saw it last time with Frazier. It's like if Frazier got on base, all right, Ty France hit, finally, you know, gets back to hitting power, hits the home run, and you're like, there it is. Like, that's where you just need one base runner ahead of a guy like Ty France or Julio.
Put a little pressure on the pitcher, change the way they, you know, put them
throw from the stretch. Yep.
And in Gossman's case, putting him into that weird kind of rocking stretch that he's got, no thank you. I don't care for that at all. All right, coming up next, rivalries are great, even better when you see the real hatred take place. We saw it yesterday. We'll tell you about that and everything else you need to know next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, nice win for the Mariners last night. They find themselves in a whole bunch of these situations early where they feel like must-win games. And I know that's hard to say despite where the calendar's at, but it has definitely felt that way, kind of the pressure that they've put themselves on. And kind of like what happened in New York, they found a way to make it happen yesterday. This time salvaging a game in Toronto, back against the wall. Marco Gonzalez was, quite frankly, excellent. Through six innings of one-run ball, we all know that might not have been enough without the bats, and thankfully, Ty France provided some thunder.
Ty France, first pitch, swung on, drive deep to left center field. That thing got carry. It is gone. A two-run rocket by Ty France, and the Mariners have a 4-1 lead. Jumped on the first pitch, a high fastball, got it into the front row, left center field.
Yeah, some insurance runs that they could absolutely use. A couple of homers in the night. Cal Raleigh had one. He's got, what, four hits on the year? Three of them are home runs. Abraham Toro hit another ninth-inning shot to give him just a little bit of extra cushion. M's go on to win it 5-1. And, yeah, that's even more impressive against the starting pitcher. Kevin Gausman has been one of the best in baseball this year. So, yeah, over the last couple of last week, the Mariners beat Scherzer, beat Gausman, but lost to Kikuchi and Barrios, who's been struggling. So go figure, man. This team is mercurial, to say the least. Also worth noting, Steven Souza not back in right field last night. The day after his rough start, Adam Frazier played right while Abraham Toro was at second. And now they head off to Boston for four. Red Sox kind of limping in. Yes, they just beat the Astros 3 out of 4, but they're just 15-22 on the season. George Kirby, Rich Hill will get it started this afternoon. Talk about opposites, and I know a lot of people have made this comp, but, you know, Kirby, young guy, throwing as hard as anybody, 99 miles an hour, and then Rich Hill, one of the older pitchers in the game, veteran, wily, doesn't throw hard at all. You may see some sliders in the 60s. So, yeah, you're going to see a very, very different way of getting people out on either side of the mound tonight. Back to 500 now for the road trip. Kind of a magic number. Just don't get out of it, right? Just stay close to 500 and you can wait for a win streak, wait for some health and try to propel you forward. But it doesn't work if you find yourself 7, 8, 9 games under 500. So just surviving this road trip would be a huge step in the right direction right now for the Mariners.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Looks like some changes coming to the Pac-12, the league deciding that the two teams with the top winning percentages will face each other in the championship game, scrapping their old formula, which was the North Division against the South. The goal here, according to George Klevikoff, is to place our two best teams in our Pac-12 football championship game, which we believe will provide our conference with the best opportunity to optimize college football playoff invitations and ultimately win national championships. Now, I don't do headline rewrites. You got to wait for Stacy to do that at 10:15 this morning. But essentially what he's saying here is we're really just trying to help USC and maybe Oregon get themselves into a college football playoff, because I don't see how this helps the conference in general. But it may improve USC's chances. It may at times help Oregon. I think that those two teams are poised to dominate this conference now for a long time based on their willingness to spend money, the money they got, and then just their increased importance of that now in the new NIL system. So, yeah, it makes sense. They're trying to help USC right now. I don't know if it necessarily does anything for any of the other, 10 teams in this conference.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Blowouts continuing in the NBA. This time it was Golden State taking it to Dallas in Game 1, 25-point victory. Never really in doubt. That seems to have been a lot of NBA games this year. For whatever reason, these playoffs have had a lot of blowouts. Pretty great start, though, to both series. In the NHL last night, first Ian Cole putting in the game winner in overtime for Carolina, and then an offensive explosion and some fighting as well in the Battle of Alberta. Flames led 3-0. They were up 6-2. Oilers scored 4 straight to tie it up, and then the Flames scored 3 more in a row. 9-6 your final, 15 goals scored in the game. Hyman with 2, Coleman with 2, and Matthew Tkachuk with a big night.
To the Oiler bench, to the extra attacker back on. The net is empty, and it's empty for Tkachuk, who's got the hat trick.
Yeah, hat trick and an empty netter as they go on to win 9-6. Milan Lucic, unsurprisingly, in the middle of some turmoil. It was a pretty fun game to watch. All right, PGA Championship underway. A bunch of players at 2-under, including John Daly. How about that? Robert McIntyre, Xander Schauffele, Will Zalatoris. I just saw Rory McIlroy get to 2-under. Tiger and Jordan both at 1-under through 3. That is everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour.
Appreciate the golf update there.
Hey, I got you covered if anybody needs it. If you're at work or on your way to work and you want to know how this thing's starting off, I'm sure people are curious what Tiger's doing, and he's looked pretty good so far. Just kind of watching him walk around, he looks comfortable. He doesn't look like he's limping or kind of favoring one leg or anything that he was doing at the Masters. He said yesterday or 2 days ago that he was not in good enough shape yet, just like his endurance wasn't good enough when he was at the Masters. And he said, look, that's on me. I hadn't been able to do enough conditioning work. And now he says he's done a lot of that work. And just watching him, I think it'll still be harder for him day by day by day. And that's what happened in Augusta, right? He was great in day one, not as good in day two, and then faded over the weekend entirely. I think that you may see some of the same thing here here at the PGA Championship. But he looks better. Honestly, he looks
physically looks great.
Physically, yeah, he just looks better, more comfortable. He's hitting the ball well. It's funny, you know, when Tiger was young, right, he was dominating the game by being the longest in it. And now I'm watching, like, Rory and Jordan Spieth are both hitting driver, and they're hitting it 25 to 30 yards past Tiger, right? I mean, that's what's changed with his swing speed. And yet, he's got the iron game and everything else, and just sort of the presence of being Tiger Woods that he makes up for it. So, yeah, I'm watching on the ESPN Plus. They have the featured group that just stays on the three of them the whole time. And it is pretty cool just seeing these three, you know, modern legends, Tiger obviously the greatest of all time, seeing them just sort of chatting with each other and laughing with each other on the course. There's only, right, so many people that can understand, not that Rory or Jordan fully understand and can grasp what it's like to be Tiger Woods, but they're two of the only people on the planet that can come close, right? And that's got to be kind of a weird club.
Yeah, and then we mentioned this during the break. I was like, I wonder what Phil is doing. I wonder if he's watching. I wonder if he's got notifications turned on for anything. Like, what do you do if you're him?
I don't know. That's a great question, right? I mean, it's not like you're hurt. And if he was hurt, I think he'd be at the PGA Championship trying to jump onto the broadcast booth,
yeah.
Right? Like, he's great at that. I don't know. I mean, he's sort of living in disgrace right now. I don't know how he handles that. If I were him, I wouldn't be watching. I'll tell you that much. He's probably on a golf course. He's probably he's probably somewhere at his local muni trying to take some locals for some money, right? I mean, like, that's sort of what Phil does. He's out there looking for a cash game to see if he can make himself a little extra. So, yeah, weird situation. We'll keep you updated on that. I love the question I heard from Jake and Stacey yesterday. They ended up getting distracted and never fully getting to the answer, but I think it's a really good question about the Seahawks that we'll try to answer together next. Mike Salk here. Mike Salk Show here on 710 on Seattle Sports, 710 and seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
I like this question I heard yesterday from Jake and Stacey. They ended up getting distracted and talking about some other stuff. But I think it's a good question and something worth trying to figure out, because it leads me, I think, to a pretty specific answer that's instructive both on, you know, what it means to be a Seahawks fan right now, and also on the future for Pete Carroll. So the question essentially was, when will the Seahawks team be complete? When will it be complete? I love the question. It's tough to answer because in some ways there's no such thing, right? No team is ever complete. Every team has its flaws. Every general manager, every coach, every president, everybody's always looking to tinker with their team in order to try to make it just a little bit better than it is right now. Especially in the modern NFL, or really modern sports, where free agency and trades, etc. I mean, the rosters change so often that you're constantly looking to tinker, trying to get just a little bit better. So in that regard, it's an impossible question to answer. But all right, let's sort of take it at its word and just try to get as close as possible, right? When will this team be complete? A reasonable expectation, right, on when this new version of the Seahawks should be a real contender. Is it a year? Is it two? Is it three? I think it's 3 years. As I look at where the Seahawks are at right now and where they're trying to get to, I think a reasonable expectation is that they should be in contention in 3 years, right? If you look at it, it's year one to build it. That's this year. This is sort of post-Russell. Yeah. A year to build it. They went out last year in the draft, got a bunch of players that everybody seems to love, right? First round pick, 2 second round picks, a third rounder that people believe is going to be a starter right away, 2 corners in the fourth round. I mean, like, you look at where the Seahawks are at and you're like, geez, okay, this sounds like a roster that's really being built from the ground up. So no reasonable expectation of competition necessarily in year one. Year two is to find the quarterback, right? It's to determine what direction you want to go with your next franchise quarterback. If you think it's going to be Drew Locke, well, then next year better be his year where you're committing to him in some way, right, after you discovered whatever happened this year. If you're going in a new direction in the draft, next year is the year you're going to draft him. If, Justin, I know you mentioned this, if you want to go in free agency and you think that there's a veteran that you can bring in, well, you're going to have to go find him by next year, whether it's through trade or free agency. And I don't know whether you're pulling off the Tom Brady model in Tampa, because I don't know if you have enough going on to make that happen. But, you know, we'll see what happens with Lamar Jackson. There could be some other folks around. If you want to go in that direction, then next year is probably when you're making a trade, a draft pick, or a free agent signing at the quarterback. And then I'm probably going to give that quarterback 1 year to get situated, right?
So that is year two now?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, essentially, a year to build it, a year to find the quarterback, and then a year to get him situated. And in that third year, the expectation is that you're a Super Bowl kind of contender by 2024, right?
Okay.
I mean... That to me is like, all right, we're giving you a chance to go. You've moved on from a franchise quarterback. Fine. I think we can all understand, or many of us can, why they did it. We can debate whether or not it was the right thing to do. But hopefully everybody understands at the very least what the philosophy was behind it. All right, you've made a bed. Now you got a couple of years to sort of, you know, put the right pillows and get it all made the way you want it to get made. And then you got to lie in it.
Okay, so we got to text if it's 3 years, who's the coach?
Well, that's sort of the question, right? Because for me, that same level of timeline is also probably the timeline for Pete, right? He's got 3 years here. That's my understanding. That's how I would look at this, is that he's got these next 3 years to get this team into contention. A year to build, right, to build the foundation, a year to find the quarterback. And then in year three, the opportunity or the expectation is that there's some level of competition, okay. Right?
Does this feel overly optimistic and like this is if things go really, really well?
Well, I think the problem is whether it's optimistic or not, it's kind of reality, right? Because this is, yeah, it's best case scenario or close to it. But, you know, when you've been in a spot for a while, the last few years did happen, right? Pete's not being brought in new, right? And in some ways that gives him some extra leash and some extra leeway, which is great because he's had so much success and you believe in him. And I do. No one's a bigger Pete fan than me. But it also means that, you know, you had a set. What was their record this past year? 7-10?
Yep.
Right? You had a 7-10 season coming off of not having made, you know, one more than one playoff game in a decade, and then, you know, one playoff game in a season in over a decade, and then, you know, a couple of years, and if you hit that third, it's like, well, at that point, you'd be 4 years out of contention.
Well, and it was Pete's choice not to do a full rebuild, right?
That's right.
So if you can't be competitive again within 3 years, I would say that's a failure. You chose to keep what you think is an overall core intact, thinking that you just need to get a quarterback.
That's very well said. I agree with you. And some of that will also depend on what happens in Denver, which is kind of weird. But again, we've talked about this. If Russ lights it up from a stats perspective and he helps the Broncos win, get to a championship, that's not a great look. If Russ lights it up and it doesn't really help Denver win, well, that's certainly a feather in Pete's cap. And if Russ struggles here over the next couple of years and his legs go on him and he's not the same quarterback, well, the whole organization is going to look good for not having committed to him long term and getting as much as they could at the time they did. So I do think that what happens in Denver will be relevant to the future. But yeah, I think my timeline for the Seahawks, and rather than make this negative and rather than make it, you know, Pete's got 3 years or else, because I don't know that I view it that way. I just think that's kind of the realistic timeline for when this team can get to a point of where they should be. Does that seem fair?
Yeah.
Are you willing to give them 3 years more? You're a little bit more on the, hey, you decided not to go full rebuild. Is 3 years still an accurate timeline?
Well, and you were willing to trade your franchise quarterback. I feel like you should have had some sort of plan in place for what you were going to do after that.
Yeah.
So I would hope that they kind of, yeah, either already have their eye on someone in the draft next year or they have a free agency plan. Yeah, I think it should. 3 years is the max to me.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I guess maybe some of that changes if it's a veteran quarterback that they bring in next year. All of a sudden, the year to get situated maybe isn't nearly as important as it is if you go draft one of the three kids that's available next year or somebody else that you decide to give the job to. I'm kind of willing to give a rookie quarterback 1 year to kind of get it going. And then in year two, I think in the modern NFL, right, Joe Burrow, right, Josh Allen, like year two is the year I think there's like a reasonable expectation that quarterback, Russell Wilson, won a Super Bowl in year two, right?
Yeah.
So build it up now, find your quarterback next year, and then in year three, I think the expectation is that we're back to looking at Super Bowls here in Seattle. That's how I'm viewing it and kind of excited that it could go that way. Now, they made some changes, right? In order to build it up, it's not just what you're doing with the roster. Some of it is what you're doing with your coaching staff. I love the conversation with Clint Hurt yesterday, and he talked a lot about scheme and some ways that they made some changes, specifically going to a 3-4, and then maybe even more so in the secondary. And he says here that his new scheme, this defense, will change the way the secondary plays.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks. And, you know, and you, once you get to your depth, got your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football. And then you got to break and react on the ball, you know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man? Or are you playing the area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop vision and break. And we've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big change, right, that they're making in the secondary. It's a philosophical change in how they want to and how they want to engage receivers. If I understand them there, and we asked them a couple of questions yesterday to kind of get to the root of it, essentially what he's saying is in the old system, you would drop back to a spot, see what's coming, and then, you know, react to it and charge forward to try to make a play, right? In the new system, you drop into your zone and you are matching up with a guy as he comes into your zone, and that is a major change that should make them look a little stickier. I personally believe, and he said it wouldn't be the case, I think it means that it's a little riskier, right? That it's a little bit more likely to get beat over the top if you're not trying to constantly stay behind the receiver at all times. But hopefully they have a way of making up for that, and it should lead to more interceptions. It should lead to more pass deflections. It should lead to just, you know, fewer easy completions. And I think if you've been frustrated by the Seahawks defense the last half decade, what's been the most frustrating part? Easy completions, right? I mean, Brock's going to join me here in 5 minutes. I know, because he said it yesterday in the podcast, he's going to complain about bad quarterbacks being given opportunity to complete a lot of passes, right? Matt Schaub and what's the kid from Arizona last year who was in who played for Texas?
McCown.
You name it, right? I mean, there have been like 1,000 of these guys who've just like torched the Seahawks who don't do it to any. Colt McCoy. That's
Colt McCoy,
thinking.
Dang it.
Well,
right?
They're so scared of giving up explosive plays, but they're fine with giving up like 10 to 15 yards at a time so that they don't give up like a 30-yard play. And I'm like, that's not good either.
And it seems like that may be the biggest thing that changes here. So I'm not always a big believer in scheme. I'm not saying that it's irrelevant, but I'm not necessarily a big believer in, oh, we just changed the scheme and everything's going to be fine. Like, they all work. Honestly, all schemes work. They do. Like, at the professional level, you can win with a 3-4. You can win with a 4-3. You can win with a blitzing defense. You can win with a, you know, more of a passive defense that drops into coverage more. You can win with emphasis on the secondary, emphasis on this, emphasis. Like, you can win any number of ways. And the system that Pete was running, the spot and drop and vision system that Clint Hurt described there, it can work. You know how I know? Because it did. It
sure,
worked.
But I think the issue was, and Quandre Diggs talked about this, that they were like running the same cover three that they had run years before, while other the league had evolved. You have to at least like disguise things better or change things up a little. So that's why I'm excited to see that they are willing to modernize a little bit.
I think there's some truth to that, but I also will ask you, if they were running the same thing with no changes whatsoever, but had Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, and Brandon Browner in their prime, do you think that the evolution of the league would be the problem? Because I'm not sure that it would. I think the key is making sure that you have, obviously, great players, and then great players for the scheme. That
well,
everything
Diggs
fits
mentioned
together
that, too.
Well.
He said we don't have the LOB
that's
anymore.
Right. And I think this probably is a great adjustment. And that's why, even though I don't generally go towards, you just change the scheme and everything's going to be fine. I think in this case, what they're doing is trying to fit their personnel better. Right, Brock kind of convinced me yesterday that the old zone coverage they were running worked great for elite players like the ones they had. But hopefully this new system should be a little bit better for everybody. And it's new, and quite frankly, this team needed a little bit of new. Right, they just needed to make some changes, even if it was for change's sake. Shake things up, do things a little bit differently. You know, change the way other teams have to prepare for you so that it's not just, oh yeah, same old thing. We know what we're going to get with the Seahawks and we can beat it. So I think I like what's happening. I'm excited about Clint Hurt. He inspires a tremendous amount of confidence when you listen to him. And I like the decisions he's made now moving forward. Let's talk to Brock about it.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael.
How are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty good today. Are nice. You... Are you enjoying the PGA?
I am. Yeah.
Nice. Good start.
I got it on. I got Tiger and Rory and Jordan all on there together.
Not a bad crew.
It's not bad. It is crazy. I was saying earlier how things have changed for Tiger, right? He used to be the longest guy on tour when he first came up and used that to his advantage. And now he's 25, 35 yards behind the other two guys.
Yes. Yeah. And that's probably not going to change.
No, of course not at his age. But, I mean, he looks better physically. He's moving better. Yeah, watching it this morning, he does look pretty darn good. Hey, can you help do some Clint Hurt translating? Would you mind kind of throwing that?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Take that club out of the bag and help us out. So let me run you through three or four of these cuts on Clint Hurt. So let me start with the one on the 3-4 defense. He explains what the 3-4 defense does and what it allows them to do differently from when they were in a 4-3.
And obviously in today's game, everything is all about how you affect the quarterback, not only by pressuring and hitting and sacking him, but also screwing with his reads. Pre-snap and post-snap, you know, and the things you can do with that. And what 3-4 allows you to do is you can be balanced and be able to play out of too high shell and be able to cover down with your edge guys and whatnot when necessary. So anything that you can do to make the quarterback have to work, and I believe it's more than half the teams in the NFL right now are playing 3-4 defenses. So that's where the league is trending, and it's not a surprise. You look at all the quarterbacks that's coming in the league right now and all the RPO stuff that's across the league, it's something that you got to have.
What's he saying?
Okay, so if you just like look at your board, right? If you were to draw just on a sheet of paper, like a four down front, so you immediately have four big defensive linemen. Now, Pete has always enjoyed his Leo and his guy that can really rush and have that kind of dynamic ability. Now, take one of those defensive linemen off, and you obviously have three D linemen. Now you have four linebackers. And with that, what he's talking about is just from a front standpoint, you have more flexibility. More flexibility to mess with that QB, more flexibility, most importantly, to mess with the protections of those offensive line, right? I mean, it was one of the challenges that the Peyton had, one of the few in the NFL, is when we ever played Baltimore and Rex Ryan scheme of just trying to identify. If there's four down, you'd always hear Peyton say, okay, four down, and there's the Mike linebacker. Let's identify that, and that sets the protection for everything else. All of a sudden, you have three down, and maybe one of them doesn't even have their hand on the ground to try to identify, man, where is my four down lineman? I need to help my offensive line with this math so they can set their protection so you can give me an opportunity to throw it, is what Clint Hurt is saying. Now with a three down front, maybe in nickel situations, passing situations, being able to mix and match some of those things, we just screw with the numbers. We screw with the protection, and then hopefully, Mike, screw with the mind of that quarterback just a little bit to wonder whether he's protected on one side or the other.
So it's essentially getting more athletes on the field.
Yes.
Right? I mean, yes. That sounds like what you're saying, is more guys who can do multiple things and are more versatile. It's not unlike, and I remember you teaching me about this however many years ago, the advantages of the modern two tight end system, right? Where the just guys who have versatility can mess with what you want to do on defense or in this
case, on
offense.
And I know he said to you yesterday, hey, that, you know, playing defense is reactionary. And we talked about this at length in the podcast yesterday. You're reacting to the personnel groups on the field. You're reacting to their formations. You do have to react. But what this does, and what he's saying there with the 3-4, is that gives us an opportunity to have that O-line and the protection schemes and the QB react to more of our fronts, rather than just being stagnant, rather than them easily being able to identify what we're doing. We're going to make that picture a little bit cloudier right up front.
All right, so then let me play you this one, because this is what he's talking about in the secondary. It's the first of these, more on how the defense changes in this new version that he's running.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks, and you know, and you, once you get to your depth, you get your vision on the quarterback, and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football, and then you got to break and react on the ball. You know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle, where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing an area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop, vision, and break. And we've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
Spot drop, vision, and break.
Yep, spot drop is what the Seahawks were when Pete came here. Cover three team, mix a little cover one man, and we kind of mess with you in that way. Can you tell if this is man or zone? And we're going to screw with you that way. But when we play zone, we are spot dropping. We are getting to these landmarks. You're going to get to this landmark on the curl flat, on the hook zone. You're going to get to this landmark, Earl. You're going to be deeper than the deepest, so you can run red line to red line.
And what's the advantage of that? Because now, obviously,
the advantage of that is what
what's
he said. Yep, the advantage is what he said right there. You get eyes on the quarterback. Bobby, you drop into this hook zone and you get to that landmark, and immediately you get your eyes on the quarterback. So what that should do is create more takeaways, because I got my eye on the quarterback. I'm seeing when he's throwing it. I'm breaking on that route, right? If that ball gets tipped, if that ball is you know, bounced off the receiver's hands, I have eyes on it. It should help my takeaways, but we have not seen that for the last 3 or 4 years. Right, that has been, we saw it the first few years with the Seahawks, and with their length and with their athleticism and their unique athletes and so many of those spot drops, Mike. We haven't seen that the last 4 or 5 years. So now we're going to play more of, in basketball, a matchup zone. We're not going to just play this 2-3 zone, right? Okay, you got this spot. Hey, right in the middle of this 2-3, you've got the lane. Hey, you two on the wings, you're going to just lengthen out to the three-point line, and we're going to just play this spot 2-3 zone. No. Instead, we're going to play a matchup out of it. And if they do this, we're going to collapse into this part of the zone, right, in basketball terms. So I think that's probably easiest if you picture just a basketball zone and those that just line up stagnant when you teach little kids how to run a 2-3 versus the elite matchup 2-3 zones that really do play off what the offense is doing.
What about pattern matching? Can you explain what he means there, that they're going to pattern match?
Yep. So based on formations and tendencies, this team loves to run these patterns from this look. When they get in a 3-by-1, a trip side, okay, these are the routes that they love to do. This is their tendency off of it. So instead of just dropping and spot dropping to our zones, when they get in this formation, we're gonna play zone, right? We're still gonna have some of those same principles, but now we're gonna react and we're gonna match their routes. So our little nickelback, instead of just dropping under, you know, into the zone, hey, here's their tendency. They love to run an in-break off of this. They love the little slant routes off of this. So you can jump that route. You can match their routes. So it's really adding like man-to-man principles within the within a zone defense, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is really, in basketball, when you're playing a 2-3 matchup, you're really playing like, okay, we're playing a 2-3 zone, but we're matching up with man principles. Very similar to pattern reading, match reading in football.
You like it?
Oh, it has to happen. And this is what I've screamed for. This is what Heaps has screamed for. It's what I've lost my mind over, right? When Matt Schaub, as we talked about, threw for 465 yards because you just spot dropped and you gave him so many gimmies. Not only 465 yards, he was like 78%. Well, we won that game. Yeah, you did. But you didn't take it away. You didn't dictate. You didn't do anything. That guy couldn't move. That guy had very average arm strength. He was you know, decrepit at that stage of his career, and you made him look good. And if you're a spot zone team, you can do that, and you've done that over the years. You play some matchup now. You get in a 3-4. You move things around. You make Max Schaub think. Guess what? Here's a pick six. Here's a sack fumble. Here's impact plays defensively that have not been there for the last 3 years under the old system. You're trying to make an impact. You're trying to make an imprint, and both with his charisma and his energy, and I think with the horsepower from their scheme, with a number of their coaches defensively, you're going to see more impact. You have to see more impact plays defensively.
How much better could their defense be in 2020, this upcoming season, than last year? Just based on those changes and you know, a couple personnel moves.
Well, they are going to be, you know, they're going to be maybe statistically, Mike, they're going to give up some yards and some plays and everything else, and they're going to lose some games and whatever. So how you gauge that, how much better can they be? I know this gives you an opportunity to be on the offensive. This gives you an opportunity to be playmaking. This gives you an opportunity. And I know you talked to Bobby Wagner after the season and had a pretty extended conversation with him. And this gives you an opportunity to cut your guys loose. To be more aggressive, which a lot of them have clamored for. Now, to do those things in coverage, you got to have great athleticism. You got to have great instincts, right? I don't know about their corners, right? They love Trey Brown. Dave Wyman loves Trey Brown. You drafted corner, right? Was a couple of them, right? You're going to probably have a rookie play and Kobe Bryant, but there's going to be a learning curve to this. So,
And I would think it puts a lot of pressure on, especially your free safety, not to get beat deep. Right. I mean, if everybody's matching up and they're not deeper than he better make sure he's not getting beat, or Pete's not going to have that.
No. And Quandre is pretty good at that. He's pretty savvy. This plays right to his strengths. It's going to be a little more challenging for Jamal. Jamal in coverage, not his greatest strength, but, you know, is he around that box a little bit more?
But yes, they know that. And listening to Clint, he said, hey, we're going to focus on getting him into his great spots and the underneath coverage and all the things that he does. So, Brock, good stuff. It's kind of fun to talk about. I love some of the deep X's and O's stuff. Clint's great, man. I got to tell you, I was a little biased because he was in the building. Right. And I think that kind of made me hope they would go in another direction. But man, he is bringing just a completely different attitude and scheme and everything else to the table. I think it's pretty cool.
Bias or biased?
I was biased.
Okay.
Yes. There's an ED at the end of that.
Appreciate it.
Goodbye, buddy. We'll talk later. There you go. Brock Heward joins me every day, 7:45 and 9:30. We'll go from Brock to Bump. Maybe he can help on some of this, what it's like from a wide receiver standpoint. And I got kind of an offbeat question for him as well. So don't go anywhere. Michael Bump is coming up next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, salesports.com.